The Spirit and a Stick, Chapter 2. A Visit from Red Hawk. To penetrate the Indian game, one must enter a world of spiritual belief and magic. Dr. Thomas Venom, Jr., American Indian Lacrosse, Little Brother of War. Robbie was too excited to sleep that night. He tossed for hours, staring out his window at the light from the full moon, and dreaming of the endless possibilities of the stick. His imagination spun questions and answers concerning the carvings and writing on the shaft. Finally, after drifting off, he was met in a dream by a young Indian boy. Though asleep to the rest of the world, Robbie was completely awake in his dream, fully aware of what was happening to him. The Indian boy approached Robbie and introduced himself. "Hello, I'm Red Hawk. You're Robbie, right?" "Yes," Robbie said, stunned that the stranger knew his name. "And you are now the custodian of the stick?" Red Hawk asked with a broad smile. Robbie smiled back. "Mr. Lewis gave me the stick this afternoon." "Well, it's nice to meet you," Red Hawk offered sincerely. "Same here," gushed Robbie, overwhelmed by the notion that he might be talking to someone who had lived 200 years before. Though Robbie didn't ask, based on their similar heights, he could tell that Red Hawk was about his age, perhaps 14. "When he gave me the stick, Mr. Lewis told me it was special, but I had no idea this is what he meant," Robbie continued. "This is unbelievable." "Well, I know this is hard for you to believe, but through the stick I have been able to visit several other boys, and all of them have had the same initial response. They've all been great boys and men." "What am I supposed to do with the stick?" Robbie posed as an obvious first question. "That's up to you. You can do whatever you want," Red Hawk smiled again. Robbie wasn't sure what was in the realm of possibility, so he asked a more pointed question. "Mr. Lewis told me that I would be able to find out more about the history of this stick through the stick itself. Did he mean that someone like you would be able to teach me things?" "That depends on what you want to learn," Red Hawk replied cryptically. "Can you tell me how you got the stick then?" "Sure, but perhaps we should talk about some other things first. I should start by saying, Robbie, that we'll be able to visit people and places of the past. We'll be able to see and hear all around us, but none of the people of those earlier times will notice us. We'll be there, but we'll be completely unknown and invisible to anyone involved," Red Hawk explained. Robbie's dream was so real and so clear, and he went deeper into its magic. Red Hawk thought it best to begin with a narrative on the nature of the game of lacrosse in his culture. "For any young man in our Cherokee tribe, these sticks symbolized a great deal. As soon as we touched the sticks, every one of us could immediately feel the power and spirit of the warriors, living and deceased, in our tribe. What the French named lacrosse, we called stickball. The game was a central part of our lives as boys, a way for us to be accepted as men. When we were still too young to go into battle with our older brothers, uncles, and fathers, stickball substituted as a means to show our strength, skill, and courage, the same traits that would make us successful as hunters and defenders of our tribe. When we became older, we still played with passion, mostly to invite the favor of our gods, to strengthen our boys, to earn respect for our clans in contests with others, and to continue to parade our physical prowess and courage. It was a game, but also a tool that helped us become men. Would you like to see what the game looked like for my people?" "Sure." Red Hawk walked Robbie through a small stand of shade trees which ran into the shadows and burst out into a bright, sunlit meadow. This was Robbie's first trip through time, and it was to a Cherokee village on the Little Tennessee River in current-day Smoky Mountain National Park on the western edge of North Carolina. The year was 1835. Red Hawk began, "This is the clan of my grandfather, the Bear Clan. They are preparing for a stickball game with the Wolf Clan, who issued a challenge earlier in the summer." Robbie soaked in the lush green scenery, the gentle mountains all around. Red Hawk led Robbie to a small stream where they saw about 20 young Cherokee men waist deep in the water. Red Hawk described the scene. "These players are undergoing preparations for the contest tomorrow. They must cleanse themselves completely. Our tribe calls this ritual going to water. It is conducted almost exactly like the ceremony for warriors going on the warpath. It is necessary for each combatant, each player in this case, to cleanse and purge themselves. Some of the youngest warriors drank strong spirits from a jug and immediately vomited in the stream. That man, Red Hawk pointed out the older man, is the village conjurer or shaman. He is responsible for invoking the proper spirits and rituals to ensure success. Robbie watched as the man wiped ointment on the small sticks and then prayed over them. The boy noticed the interesting shape of the sticks. They were much smaller than he expected, and they were used in pairs. They were not quite like the one he had just inherited. The conjurers play a great role in determining the outcome of a contest, Red Hawk shared. They perform many rituals over the players. They even cast spells on the opposing team to impose poor play on them. The young men left the stream and began to march to the village center, where they were received by a large assemblage. This is the ball play dance, Robbie. To energize their team, all the villagers come out to offer chants, to beat drums, and to dance. These events will go on well into the night. Red Hawk then took Robbie to the events of the next morning. They observed the players wearing only breech clouts around their waists and feathers in their hair, marching in single file with sticks in their hands to the river. They're going to water again, Robbie. Each player has fasted at least since yesterday. Now once more they will cleanse themselves. The players dipped their sticks into the water and then bathed themselves. As the players waded out of the water, the conjurer scratched each player. Robbie was shocked to observe the blood seeping out of the shallow gashes. Red Hawk brought Robbie closer. The boy stared at the scratching implement. It looked like a comb with about 6 or 8 teeth. The teeth, however, were rattlesnake fangs inserted into a feather's quill. The shaman dipped the comb into a pot of sacred plant juice and meticulously etched the body of each warrior. Some of the players requested scratching in 2 or 3 areas, the chest, the arms, and the legs, with the hope that this would strengthen their lungs and limbs for the contest. After scratching, the conjurer rubbed all the players with ointment. The players then again formed a single file and began their march to the field in step with the beat of a war drum. Some of the players bellowed whoops as they marched. Most focused silently within themselves, invoking the Great Spirit to provide strength and courage. Before the contest started, the conjurers of each team escorted the players to the center of the field where they faced each other. Robbie marveled at the similarity to the pregame lineup of his games. The conjurers then offered instructions on the rules of the contest and on fair play. Robbie noticed the goals were about 300 yards apart and marked by 2 sticks set about 10 feet apart. Play began with the 2 centermen battling for a ball tossed in the air. A face-off, Robbie thought. Play was intense. The ball was often picked up with 1 stick and then carried with the 2nd stick placed on top of the 1st. It seemed as though the fastest, strongest, and smartest players were the most successful. Passing did not seem to be an integral part of the game. Many players simply ran with the ball until they were stopped by force, resulting in a mad scramble for a loose ball. Robbie watched in amazement as several pairs of players dropped their sticks and wrestled each other. Play went on for a few hours, the Bear Clan scoring 15 goals to the Wolves' 12. After the game, the players again adjourned to the river for cleansing and finally to the village center for the victory dance. You can see, Robbie, that these ceremonies are as important as the games themselves. The victory dance is similar to the one we perform when warriors return from battle. Robbie remembered that Red Hawk had said that his people were the Cherokee, and Mr. Lewis had told him that the stick was from the Iroquois. Did you say your people were the Cherokee? Yes, why do you ask? Well, Mr. Lewis told my family and me that this stick was from the Iroquois. Oh, right. Well, we will have plenty of time to discuss that. I'll be back to see you soon. We must go now. He gestured to the shadows and they quickly moved into the trees. I really just wanted to introduce myself tonight. I'll see you again soon. The next morning, Robbie woke none the worse for having been engaged in such a real and passionate dream. He shared the experience with his parents, who rather quickly dismissed it as a fantastical trip brought on by the excitement of the previous day. Chapter 3. Classmates and Teammates. I can't help but be grateful for all of the teams, coaches, and teammates I have had in my athletic pursuits. Those people and experiences have prepared me well for this position. For war is a team sport every bit as much as lacrosse is. From a letter by Lieutenant Colonel John I. Turnbull to his mother, October 18, 1944. Over the following days, Robbie insisted to his parents that his dream was different. It was a visit. As the boy persisted, his parents' concern grew. Did Mr. Lewis know this would happen? Was the stick really that special? What could happen to Robbie? They continued to caution Robbie that his dream was simply that, a dream, mostly because they were not able to understand, explain, or control such supernatural phenomena. The parents wanted to call Lewis, but they agreed to wait. Robbie continued his assertions of a visit, and when his parents were not able to accept his reasoning, he accused them of not understanding him and belittling his thoughts. They finally relented and called Lewis in California, who was not surprised to hear from them. Mr. Lewis, this is John Jones, Robbie's father. You gave him the stick? Yes, Mr. Jones, good to hear from you. Would you mind if I put you on speakerphone with my wife? No, not at all. Please do. Well, the reason we are calling is that Robbie has told us some interesting things that are somehow related to the stick, and we were hoping that you might be able to shed some light on his behavior. I'll be glad to try. What types of interesting things? Lewis asked, knowing all too well what he was about to hear. Well, Robbie seems to think that he was visited by a young Indian named Red Hawk while he was sleeping. Robbie has told us that he had never experienced any dream like this. He said he was wide awake during it, that he knew exactly what was going on, and that he has total recall of every detail. It happened about 3 weeks ago. I believe it was the night that you gave him the stick. He also mentioned a sort of tingling in his hands every time he touches a stick. The parents could not see Lewis smiling through the phone. Anything else? That's really about it. Do you know anything about this? You said it was a very special stick. Is this what you meant? Well, you will probably find what I'm about to say completely incredible, but please bear with me. While I was the custodian of that stick, I beheld similar visions and many others as well. The parents felt a chill and looked at each other in disbelief. Was this some sort of spell? He should have told us about this. Was this possible? They maintained their composure and allowed Lewis to continue. Before you become too alarmed, I can assure you that no harm will come to your boy because of this stick. But you can understand our apprehension. Of course I can. I know what Robbie is going through. I think we'll need to continue this discussion in person. I'll be in town this weekend. Would you mind waiting until then? No, we can wait till then, but no longer, please. That would be great, Lewis responded. Can we say Saturday night at 7 for dinner, Mary offered? Yes, I'll be there. But could you please do me a favor before then? If you're concerned about my credibility, please call the superintendent at the United States Naval Academy, Admiral Ed Charles. He'll provide you an independent source of my background. After they hung up, Robbie's parents were even more uneasy. First thing the next morning, the Joneses called the superintendent. Admiral Charles' office, may I help you? Said the friendly voice of a middle-aged woman. Yes, my name is John Jones. May I speak to Admiral Charles, please? Yes, Mr. Jones, the Admiral was expecting your call. Good morning, Mr. Jones. This is Ed Charles. Captain Lewis asked me to expect your call. What can I do for you? Admiral, would you mind if I put my wife on speakerphone? Please. Well, Admiral, we just met Mr. Lewis for the first time about a month ago, but he's suddenly become a big part of our lives. You see, he chose to make our son the recipient of a very old Native American lacrosse stick he had received many years ago. He said that it was really quite a remarkable gift, and, well, it has been so overwhelming. Mr. Lewis asked me to call to ease some of our apprehension. I understand. So you need some confirmation of Captain Lewis's background, integrity, and so on? Yes, sir, I suppose. Then you apparently know very little about Jim Lewis, is that right? That's right. Well, let me start by saying that I've known Jim since we were plebes, that is, freshmen, here at the Naval Academy in 1962. We were plebes' summer roommates, classmates, and teammates. That's almost 45 years and counting. I can assure you, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, that Jim is one of the finest people I've ever known. He's a truly great naval officer, leader, Navy pilot, and person. Everything else I'll say is simply icing. You said Jim gave your son a lacrosse stick? Yes. So I'll bet that Jim conveniently failed to share his lacrosse background with you? That's right. Well, he did say that he had played many years ago and that it had been a big part of his life. I think that's all that he said. Well, Jim has never been one to toot his own horn, so let me do that for him a little. Again, keep in mind at this point that none of this really matters because the lacrosse aspect of Jim's life only helped create the foundation for his future successes. He's been a leader all of the years that I've known him. But it might be good for you and your son to know that Jim is widely considered the greatest lacrosse player ever. When he was at the Naval Academy, he revolutionized the way the game was played. If you talk to many lacrosse people about the players who dominated the game over the years, most would single out Jim. Paul and Gary Gate of Syracuse University, Mark Millen of the University of Massachusetts, and one or two others have certainly achieved greatness in the modern era. But the game is different now. Back when Jim played, no one had ever seen anyone like him. Prior to Jim, I guess you'd have to mention Jim Brown, also of Syracuse, class of 57. If you're wondering, yes, he's the Jim Brown of football fame. He was a tremendous lacrosse player also. It's difficult to compare any of these players directly since they were all so fantastic, but it is fair to consider Jim in a class of his own. He was inducted into the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame in 1982. The Joneses stared at each other in disbelief. Jim and I played together for all 4 years here. Our first year was on the plebe team. Then we won 3 straight national championships, and our record was something like 35-1. Not many people know or believe this, but in 1963, our plebe team defeated our varsity in a pretty formal scrimmage. Under most circumstances, that would be impressive. But in this case, that varsity team won a national championship. We love to ride those guys about it, and we continue to do so after all these years. We had several excellent players and coaches, but Jim was central to our success. He was a phenomenal player. Jim was first-team All-American and received the Turnbull Award 3 consecutive years. The Turnbull Award? The father asked, recognizing the name that Lewis had mentioned when they first met. Oh, forgive me. That's the award given annually to the top attackmen in lacrosse, Division I players back then, and nowadays in Division II and Division III, I believe. The parents remained speechless. Hello? The admiral inquired as he heard the silence. Yes, we're still here, the father offered. Should I continue? Please do. Well, in 1991, Jim was honored by the NCAA with their Silver Anniversary Award. Jim's high school background is probably worth noting as well. On Long Island, Jim was a member of a team that came out of nowhere and won many lacrosse championships. When he graduated, he was considered a unique lacrosse player. He played at a level that no one was familiar with. He was playing the game in a different way and with remarkable results. He once scored 10 goals and had 11 assists in less than a half of one game. He also collected a number of very prestigious awards. By the time he left Long Island, his reputation as a player was spreading to the major centers of lacrosse. Recently, he was the first name mentioned in the mythical All-Century team. Should I go on? Please, if you don't mind. Well, from there, Jim went on to become a top-notch naval aviator and test pilot. He was a superb pilot and naval officer. The Joneses didn't want to ask the next question, but the mother could not hold back. Did Mr. Lewis ever mention anything about the old Native American stick that he had? I know that he kept an old stick in a leather bag, but he never talked about it or used it when anyone was around. He was pretty protective of it. I'd be a little surprised that he gave that stick away. I wonder if that's the one he passed to your son. I think it probably is, said the father. Well, that is very interesting. I never knew much about his stick, but I did know at the time when we were roommates that that stick contributed to his fascination with the game and its ancient history. I'm sure that his knowledge of the game's history accentuated his magnificent skills. He studied every aspect of the game. He loved and thrived on the game's ancient roots and often referred to its warrior nature. What else can I help you with? Nothing. You've been very helpful. How should we address him? Jim retired as a captain, but he would probably wish to just be called Jim. If you insist on being formal, he is technically Captain Lewis. Thank you very much, Admiral. We can't tell you how much we appreciate this. You're quite welcome. Please let me know if I may be of any further assistance, and good luck. Thank you again, Admiral. Goodbye. The parents stared at each other again. They intentionally did not share the contents of this discussion with Robbie and began to make preparations for Lewis's visit.